again, it's a part of our culture to just think that we can will these things. It's like, well, sometimes you got to totally step away from the thing. Just walk away from this thing for a bit, clear your mind, and then the solution somehow magically appears itself to you. Whatever you think that process is, it's still a very real process. So that sort of is what I mean by thinking is dead, right? Thinking is thinking without having any breaks from thinking is a dead thing. It's stagnant, right? It's a skeleton of sorts, you know, like thinking is, because it's always based on the past, things that we've already experienced, right? That's why I think skeleton is a good thing, is because it's like, well, it's just what's left over from a real alive thing that happened, right? There was this real alive thing that happened, but now it's a skeleton.
This is Way of the Artist with Brandon Colby Cook and Evan Schulte.
Exploring the challenges of the creative call
so that you can claim your own path
and make your life a work of art.
Hey folks, welcome to the podcast, Way of the Artist. There's beauty right now. That's what we're hinging this one on. We haven't actually had much of like a conversation necessarily around this pre-recording, but it was something that you said in just our conversation and something that you were thinking about and some awareness that you were having. And I love the ring of that. And there's beauty right now. And I'm excited to dive into just that little package of words there, because I can see this going in a lot of potentially different directions and fleshing this out and giving it some context into the meaning of those words. So as I'm sort of my initial thoughts on those words are that it's a reminder. It's a reminder not to get too caught up in some place in the future that you're looking to land at and about begrudging where we are now, right? And taking a broader picture of our present moment and how this might fit in with a bigger picture. And not only that, but that even in challenging moments and in times of difficulty, it's like there's so much beauty in the place we're in. And if we get too caught up in, you know, in our last podcast, we talked a lot about past and future, which is definitely where we can go. We can get caught up in those places and we miss out on that present reality where there is so much beauty to be found when we're not caught up in a lot of the voices and stories that we, you know, negative stories that we might have playing in our minds. And the last thing I'll just say, I won't flesh this one out very much more, but a word that just pops into my mind with all that said is gratitude. I feel like gratitude is something that plays into this conversation as well. So those are some very general opening statements for me. Brandon, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad that you landed on gratitude, because that's actually what I'm thinking. You know, yeah, past and the future are a big part of what causes us to sometimes, I don't know, like deflate the moment, I guess. Like, and it's just like, you know, you're waiting to get somewhere or you're caught in worry and concern about the future. Or sometimes, you know, the past regrets or mistakes or, you know, shoulda, coulda, wouldas type of things come up, but you know, something that I was thinking about as you're talking was, yeah, the gratitude side of it. And the way I found that this comes up for me is I get hyper-focused on something and then I miss a bunch of other things. And so, you know, this can be, well, I don't know, like, for example, you have 10 great things going on in your life and one thing that you wish you had that isn't working. And then you get hyper-focused on that one thing and forget about the other 10 that are like great things that are going on in your life. And this has been an exercise for me. Like every morning I wake up and I do a gratitude exercise. I just decided, you know what, I need to do this because I came to the recognition that gratitude combats fear and worry and anxiety. And I was having this fear and worry and anxiety come up, which doesn't usually happen for me a lot, but for whatever reason, it was coming up and I didn't know how to navigate it. And then I was told, or at least I came across some information that was like, yeah, gratitude is the, like, will counter. You can't really be grateful and scared at the same time, which is also, you won't be anxious and you won't be worried because those are all just byproducts of fear. And yeah, it's true. And what I found when I started doing the exercise was like, oh, look at this. There are like all these great things in my life right now that I'm not paying attention to. And there's like this one thing or maybe a couple things that I'm all worked up, fearful, worried, anxious about. And so what I found a gratitude exercise did was it helped me to have a more holistic view of my life and not be hyper-focused on the one thing or two things that are not perfect right now. And that also led me down the road of how do I do this to like kind of escape being present and like end up in the future going, well, when I get here, then it'll be good because that thing will be resolved. But it's like, that's assuming that these other 10 things, you know, whatever, it's probably more, but these other 10 things are still in place. Because if you removed one of those, then I would just worry about that. So it's this kind of whack-a-mole game to some degree where you can get caught always trying to put out a fire, solve a problem, and you're just always scared and worried and whatever. Whereas if you're in gratitude, you're looking at, okay, all this stuff is going right. It's one thing isn't going perfect yet, but I'm so grateful and so happy that so much of this is going right. And like that makes it a little bit easier to approach the one or two things that aren't going so well. So I guarantee no matter what, there's more to be grateful for than you realize and probably more to be grateful for than to not be grateful for. And it might take a little bit of digging, but if you can begin to kind of turn the tide on that, what I found is that it enabled me to not function every day under this kind of foreboding fear and actually dread. I was experiencing dread at moments, which was brutal. But when I'm not functioning under this worry and stress and dread and fear and all of that stuff, I'm just better in life. So that's made me start to realize, hey, you know, this moment is really beautiful. And even though it's not everything is exactly the way I want it, this moment's really beautiful. And that's a much better way for me to begin to solve the things that I want to bring into my life. And, you know, I'll throw this word out there, but it's true, manifest. I know some people, like, they have their own opinions about that. But you really do manifest things in your life. And you don't realize you're doing it all the time. Because if you're being active towards anything, it is beginning to come into your life. And I look at where I am today and I look at where I was like a year ago and I go, wow, man, you've improved your life so much. Like, look what you did. Look what you created. Look what you built around yourself. And I didn't even notice it. So that's where gratitude can kind of snap you out of it and go, oh, wait a minute. This is pretty good. This is what I wanted. I manifested this. Anyway. Yeah. So gratitude, I think, is a really good catch on this one.
Yeah. And I think that in many respects, I think why gratitude is such a great thing for bring us into that beauty of right now is because gratitude in many ways is of itself like a form of beauty in a kind of way. Like there's something beautiful about having a genuine moment of gratitude about the things in your life. Like, and yeah, my wife and I, we have a similar practice where daily we ask her, it's like, what do you appreciate? And you know, and sometimes I have to change the word around, because like if I'm having a rough, if I've had a rough day and trying to be like, what do I appreciate? Like, it can be like, all right, no, I'm not appreciating anything. But I can flip it around sometimes with just like, well, what am I grateful for? What am I gratitude? Or a word that actually has a lot of power for me, probably more than anything. And I strangely have a reluctance. I have a weird thing around it, but learning to let that one go. But is actually blessed. You know, what do I feel blessed by? What are the blessings I have in my life? And for some reason, that word just opens things up to me, where I just go, it's like, oh yeah, like I've been blessed with all of these things right now. Like it's like, oh, I can't appreciate anything right now, but I can recognize the ways that I feel I'm blessed in my life, right? And yeah, there's real beauty in that. And I think that it also opens up, you know, you said manifestation, the word that had come to my mind as that was coming up for you was creativity, right? Like there's also a creative act, right? It's also a way of us creating something as opposed to being destructive, which is kind of what a negative headspace puts you into. You're just in a destructive, you're just tearing shit down. I mean, sometimes stuff needs to be torn down for sure. But, you know, I think that in that process, particularly if we are in like a fearful state, like you're just ripping things down. It's just like, whoa, hang on a second. Like we're tearing down things that do not need to be torn down right now. You know, we're tearing down, you know, important structure here, where, and I guess in many ways, that's where that recognition, like a gratitude recognition can help. Cause it's like, oh, hang on a second. Let's keep the structure up. Let's, you know, we can keep these things. We can recognize that there are some things that just aren't working, or some things that we would like to make better. But in many ways, it's the gratitude actually helps us come into contact with reality, with a more complete picture of reality, which is not often how we think about it. Like very often our culture is like, well, any sort of positive type of thinking is out of reality. You know, the serious people are the ones who are critical, you know, like who are taking things down a peg, kind of a thing, like let's bring things back down to the ground here. But that's not necessarily any more of a reality. In fact, that can be a disreality. I don't know if that's really, that's the word that came to mind. I don't think it's a real word, but there it is. But I think that we can, yeah, like we can get focused on that. And I think to a large degree, our culture has made us fixed on that. I mean, to a certain extent, human beings in general, like we that pattern recognition ability that we have, and our ability to see things that are wrong, have or aren't working, helps us in being able to come up with solutions to problems. So I'm not completely dismissing the ability to be critical of things, but I think that it's just like we put all of our too many eggs in that basket, right? And that what happens is that we, without having that recognition of like, well, hang on a second, but there are all of these good things that are here, and that we want to make sure that these things continue to exist, you know, while we bring in new things. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's in many ways, that's probably the highest form of what we might think of conservatism, right? Which is like, hang on, these are good things that hold us, that are actually sustaining us and holding us up, right? And we want to make sure that as we are making progress on these other things, that we're not dismantling these good things, mm-hmm. right? And also, we don't actually have a complete picture of things to make progress on if we don't have that picture of the things that are good, right? Because again, that we can end up just taking down things that actually you don't want to take down.
Well, that's an interesting vein that you opened up there. Talking about progress and conserving good things, I think is an interesting topic. I mean, I know there's like the whole political side of it, but like aside from all that, progress isn't always forward moving and it isn't always new. And I think that's a really important wisdom that we need to find and adopt as artists and probably as society as a whole, because as technology becomes more prevalent and advances at such a quick rate, we are going to see new and new things like, and not just because new things are coming in, but then there's new ways in which we interact and new things that come of that. And the newness is, you know, there becomes a point where you become destabilized, you know, and you actually put yourself into a vulnerable place, which is actually dismantling things that you care about. So like, for example, something that annoys you right now, you say, like, for example, my cat, here's a simple one. I love my little cat, Charlie. He's amazing. He's like my best little buddy. In the mornings when he wants food, and usually about 5-10 minutes just before my alarm goes off, he kind of, I don't know, he has an internal clock or something, but he knows, and he starts patting on the door or like something, and he just makes just a little bit of noise. He's just like telling me he's there. He's like, hey, I'd like to eat now. And I find it extremely annoying. It annoys me so much because I'm like, ah, man, I don't want to get up yet. And then he'll kind of do it. And then he'll like tell him to stop and he'll come back a couple minutes later, do it again. And it's kind of like waking me up. Right. And I think about that. I'm like, man, I wish I could get him to stop. And, I think about this other thing, Kate. So would it be better if I tolerate this annoyance or he wasn't in my life at all? And this is where conservatism comes into place, where it's like, yeah, I have this thing I don't like and it kind of annoys me, but also I wouldn't want the thing to go away entirely. I just want it to not do it that way. And I think this is where progress becomes kind of an error in our thinking, where we go, well, if it's new, it's good because it means it's improved. And it's like, so you want to get a whole new cat just so you don't have this problem? And, you know, there was a workshop I was doing at one point, and we were talking about this one woman was talking about her mom and how her mom annoyed her when she did this thing or whatever. And then one of the instructors in this workshop came along and said, you know, there'll be a day where you would do anything to have that annoying day with your mom again, because she won't be in your life anymore. And we all just like fucking started bawling our eyes out because it just hit us. Like all of a sudden it was like, look at us, you know, and the thing is this is kind of how, I think this is a big part of this talk, right? Is that there's a certain element of like, yeah, this is annoying right now, but this is also beautiful right now. And if it was between this and not having it, I would rather have it. And so then that's a different way at looking at something that maybe annoys you or aggravates you or causes some type of disruption in your emotion or whatever. And I think this is, you know, that kind of sums up this conversation. There's beauty in this now, you know? And so there'll be a day where this little cat, you know, is gone and he won't be patting on the door in the morning. Thinking about that makes me emotional. And I go, man, okay, can I wake up in the morning and just be grateful that this little guy's here? I mean, he's been in my life for like, you know, probably about 11 or 12 years, right? He's not going to be around forever. And there quite likely will be a day where he isn't. And I hope that day doesn't come anytime soon, but this is a way of connecting to these things. And like, okay, maybe I can find ways to kind of, you know, teach him not to do that. Maybe I spray him with a water bottle or something, you know, maybe we find some type of solution. Maybe I'll look at cat videos and figure out, you know, whatever. Or maybe I just wake up and I just kind of appreciate the fact that he's my alarm system, you know, whatever it is. But the thing is my point is, yeah, there's beauty in this now. And I think we don't always see it. And I think this is what I'll say. There's something we might want to conserve about what seems imperfect right now. And we should not throw the baby out with the bathwater as we're trying to make progress and manifest change in our lives.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of things, which I think in many ways sum up so much of the point of looking for the beauty of the moment. And that's some very beautiful examples that you came up with, and in that recognition of the transitoriness of life and of what happens in life, you know, like these moments, they come and they go, like, and that's part of that beauty is that, yeah, like, these things are not always going to be here, right? And just in that recognition of something, because even in a hard time, it's often in the hard times where we learn something so profound, you know, and the recognition of, like, well, that's a beautiful thing, right? And can we recognize the beauty of the difficult moment, right? Because this will pass, this will go. And just like anything else, you know, like it's things that we think about in terms of things that we appreciate almost across the board, you know, watching a sunset, you know, like it's there and it's gone, right? And that's so much of what our life is. It's like, you got to take this in right now, because that sun is setting and it's going to be gone. Like, and yes, you know, hopefully you live to see another one of those things, but you can only, you can't enjoy it in any other period of time. Like, you've got to enjoy it right now, because you might remember a sunset, but it's just the memory of the thing. And it's like, you got to take the one that's right in front of you and really appreciate it and have that thing. And, you know, this is very much in terms of what artists do as well, right? Artists are so much involved in trying to show us about the beauty of these moments, right? Like, it's whatever the medium is that an artist is working in. You know, I think, and this is a conversation I've been wanting to do on the podcast for a while, is talking about art as an act, I guess. Not necessarily an act, but it as a form of reminder, right? Of reminding us of things that hit a deep place in us, where when it really hits, it shows us something, it wakes us up to something, and it comes with the feeling of remembering, right? Even though it's just like, there's a newness to it, there's a feeling of like, whoa, this is just being shown to me, but it also comes with this, but I already knew this somehow. I already knew the thing that you were telling me, and that's, to me, one of the kind of spiritual aspects of great art, you know, if for lack of a better term to put it. But it's art reminds us, and a great artist reminds us of, like, hey, pay attention to these things, right? We can get so caught up in the thing of progress. Like, I actually, you know, we never really think of progress as a negative thing, right? And real progress in and of itself, it isn't a bad thing. I think that the problem is that we have ideas of what progress are, right? And our ideas about them are often completely misguided, you know, because very often of the fact that our idea of progress is not actually in contact with reality, because we don't have the capacity to be present and to take in what actually is. So we're just caught in some sort of a vision of a thing that's got that's not actually really tethered to what the reality of things are. And when we're trying to create progress from that place, we're probably on the direction of actually doing something pretty destructive, right? Because we're not in contact with reality, right? We don't have that place of, you know, having a place of gratitude for the good things, right? We don't have that balance going on. And so it's just this idea, and we can end up doing a lot of damage in trying to create progress. And I think there's a lot of that we can identify and look at in our world today. Like, no doubt in many ways, the advent of the internet and social media and giving us more ways in which we can connect with each other. Hey, look, there's a lot of really great things going on there, but there's a lot of really bad things that have happened in that space too. It's not all just progress, right? And to a degree, part of, like, if you want to say, like, the in the conservatism part of it, something that we are recognizing now that we need to conserve is just real human to human contact. Mm-hmm. We're like, whoa, we're spending way too much time in these digital spaces. We don't necessarily want or need more of these spaces. We don't necessarily want to actually make more of our lives be in that space, that we actually need to come back into real physical communal spaces where we're having human interaction. I think that it's actually only going to become more and more important with how technology is taking us to a point of, you know, like, where deepfake technology already is, but how that's only going to get better and better and better. It's going to make real human interactions even more important in order to help us keep tethered to reality, right? And I think that that's already taking place, but I think this is just, I don't know where necessarily I'm going with this anymore at this point. I'm just rambling, so I'm just going to shut up.
Yeah, shut up. Okay, well, yeah, I think there's a certain amount of, when we disconnect from the moment and we try to escape the moment and we try to distract ourselves from the moment, it's a Band-Aid solution that does kind of seem to work. It's like taking a pain reliever. It kind of works for the moment, but doesn't solve the problem. It, you know, it's like, oh, I broke my arm, and it's like, it really hurts. I'm going to take a pain reliever. And then you take a pain reliever and you kind of forget your arm's broken. And then eventually the pain reliever wears off. And then you're like, oh, my arm's broken. This hurts. And it's like, I'm going to take a pain reliever. And the next time you take it, it doesn't work as well. So you take a little more. And then pretty soon you're bordering on going down. Like, that's how addiction works in a lot of ways. That's how, you know, that's how a lot of things happen, right? A lot of bad habits happen. A lot of bad coping mechanisms happen. And I think the thing is that there's like one of the things that I've had to kind of work through in the last few months, and I say had to because I had to because of my values. I didn't have to, but I had to because if I kept ignoring them, it meant that I would have to compromise on values and certain things that I cared about. So I had to face up to certain things. And so through facing up to certain things, I realized, okay, well, there's like discomfort or there's pain. And so, if I'm just going to use it's more emotional, but if I'm going to use a more practical analogy, I'll use this broken arm thing. It's like my arm's broken, and what I was doing was taking pain relievers, and I was trying to ignore it. And, you know, it's like, it'll heal. And then I won't feel the pain anymore. And then I will escape the pain, and then it'll be healed and whatever. And it's kind of looking at it and going, well, this thing's broken and it's not fixing itself. And it needs care and it needs attention and it's actually demanding my attention. So instead of distracting myself, instead of, you know, instead of trying to escape this, instead of ignoring it, denying it, and all those other fancy things, I'm going to just look at it. And let's just come in contact with this thing. And yeah, it's painful. Yeah, whatever. But like, let's acknowledge the situation and go like, what can I do here? And so then by going, okay, well, like, I don't want my arm to be broken and I want to fix it. So then it's like, well, what can I do to fix it? What can I do to mend this? What can I do to heal this? And what is this telling me? And how did this happen? And, you know, ask some questions and look at it and interact with it and be with it. And I think that, you know, when you make a mistake or you wake up to something and it's like you didn't make the mistake, but the mistake was cast upon you, you know, and that can be like trauma, things like that, whatever that come up. And you go, okay, here I am, imperfect, flawed, you know, and something is not right. And you can look at that instead of like going like, oh, like there's something wrong with me and all that. You can look at it and go, okay, how great is it that I see it? Because how much of my life did I go without seeing this? And now I see it. So there we go. I'm grateful for that. Okay, I can see it. Well, I'd rather not see it. It was easier when I didn't see it. It was easier to get through life. And it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe. But like in one of our last talks, we talked about kind of the, you know, moving out of ignorance, right? And this is kind of one of those things where it's like, well, you're better equipped to navigate the world now. You can actually do more than you ever could. And you're more capable. You're more aware. You're less likely to cause harm in anyone else's life out of carelessness or like just ignorance. And so these are all good things. So these are all gratitude exercises of like, check in with the moment, see what's going on. So like for me, I talked earlier in this conversation, I said, dread came up. Dread, the few times in my life that I've experienced dread are so few and far between. Like I can probably remember every one of them, you know, like it's just such a rare intensity of fear. But then I had dread come up and I'm like, whoa, dread, this is like, it's destabilizing. It's like debilitating. It's all this stuff. And I go, okay, let's look at the dread. Cause like most of what I was trying to do is run away from it, escape it, numb it out until it went away. And then I could just feel like, okay, this passed, but it wasn't passing. It was kind of coming up and there was some sensitivity to it. And then once I started looking at it, it's like, okay, well, what if you looked at this as like a gift? Like you were being sent a wonderful message from the ether to say like, hey, this is more than what you think's going on. Like you're scared about this thing, which caused worry and anxiety. And look, it led to dread. This dread is actually a deeper thing than what you were scared of. It's actually tied into childhood. It's tied into some trauma. It's tied into some story you're telling yourself. We can change that story now because the emotion is so strong. We have purpose and meaning to look at the story and we can go in, we can rewrite it and we can do a new narrative of our life because maybe this dread was born out of like a 7-year-old version of you that didn't have power, didn't know what to do and wasn't aware. But now you're this guy who is aware and is capable and can deal with it. And what kind of parent would you be to that kid who was in that situation? Would you just tell them, hey, shut up, get out of the room and like go deal with that on your own? Or would you say, let's figure this out. Let's work this. What are you so scared of, man? You know, monster in the closet? Okay, you know what? I'll go with you. Let's go fucking open the closet. Let's look inside. Where is it? Well, I thought it was there. Okay, well, it disappeared. Okay, all right, but there's no monster in the closet. No, it's not there. Okay, under the bed. Okay, well, let's go look under the bed together. Let's do this together. And so then you become your own champion. And this becomes, you know, this is progress, but also like understanding that that emotion that caused me to get to the point of dread was an unhealed wound, like a broken arm, but it was an unhealed wound as a child that I've never had a chance to heal until today. So how great is it that dread came up? Because I've been walking around with a broken arm my whole life, essentially. And now all of a sudden I can mend it. And now I get to do the rest of my life without this broken arm. What a gift. And that's where I think like a painful emotion becomes a beautiful thing.
Yeah, there's opportunities for beauty all the time. I remember some old sort of mentors of mine, I'm trying to remember how they put this, say like every moment is an opportunity for a grievance or a miracle. You know, and sort of like, wouldn't you rather have the miracle? You know, and that comes with a certain degree of awareness and mindfulness of what's going on. It has a lot to do with what you're saying, which is yeah, what is that story, I guess, that we're telling ourselves? I mean, we've talked about that a lot. I have something formulating here. It's just taking a second. I was thinking about, and people are probably sick of this if they're repeat listeners, but you know, like a part of one of the things that I love about teaching actors, and very specifically teaching actors about, you know, going through the Meisner process. Not really a technique, but it's just a kind of way of shifting the focus, you know, reconditioning to a certain extent. And, you know, this conversation and this title of like, there's beauty right now. It just sort of dawned on me that it's like, oh yeah, it's got a lot to do with it, because actors are very often focused on trying to achieve some sort of moment, you know, some sort of moment of greatness in the scene or the play or the film or whatever it is. And, or, you know, that moment on, you know, of recognition from their peers through awards and things like that. But as far as performance goes, it's, you know, that thing of trying to get somewhere other than where you are right now. Like life actually begins in this space down the line over here. And as we've been talking about, that's a very human thing. You know, we have that attitude, and it translates into actors and their craft of trying to be somewhere other than where they are, trying to create or manufacture, contrive some kind of moment. And that approach to things is the very thing that robs them of the thing that they're trying to create. And one of the things I love about taking actors through Meisner is that it in many ways is a practice of this very thing of like, well, there's beauty right now, right? There's beauty right now in this back and forth you're having with this other person, where each of you are just held together in a sense in just simply through recognizing and expressing just the reality of what's happening right now, right? Just acknowledging that person over there. You just smiled at me. I did just smile at you, right? Doesn't seem like much, but when two people are really just connected to each other, it's beautiful. Like, it's a beautiful thing to see, and you just don't know where it's going to, where things are going to go. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes very dramatic things kind of happen in there, but you have no control over trying to do that. And the more you try and exert control to try and do that, the more the thing falls apart. You know, the more the thing becomes a really weird exchange, you know, to to anyone who's ever watched Meisner work go on for any length of time, and certainly as a teacher and having seen it, any time that I see someone trying to direct this sort of interaction, this improvisational interaction that they're having, and try and steer it somewhere, the whole thing gets really weird. It's really hard to describe what it is, but it becomes really strange and really weird. And until someone recognizes that that's what's going on, right? But there's something about, you know, this isn't a new concept, but something maybe worth exploring a little bit is the relationship of truth and beauty, right? Very much, I think that's a long part of like the discussion and the philosophy of beauty, is that truth is beauty and beauty is truth, that kind of a thing. But I think that's, there's good reason why that's been a discussion, because there is a truth to that truth contains within it a kind of beauty, because there's a recognition in it. And coming back to something, to what we were talking about earlier, is, you know, part of that practice of gratitude, again, is actually, it's a truth recognition, right? Because you can't feel genuine gratitude about something that you don't honestly feel that way about it, right? Like you're connecting yourself actually to some form of truth, mm-hmm. some sort of joyful, positive truth that's going on in your life. You're not imagining it. You're not contriving some fake thing, because you can't make yourself feel that way about something that you don't actually feel that way about. You can't extract some kind of meaning from something in your life that doesn't actually have meaning for you. You know, like it actually brings you to things that actually really mean something to you in your life right now, in the present moment, right? So, yeah, I don't know. The gratitude, I don't know if we want to continue on the gratitude path, but I mean, that's just another interesting insight that's coming up for me. Hey, everybody, this is Evan, and this episode is brought to you by my book. Yes, I recently released a book called The Actor's Awakening, Connecting Spirituality to Craft. Expand yourself as an actor and your craft through a spiritual perspective. Take a journey that will explore universal philosophies and insights to help you understand human nature in a profound way and develop practices to take your work to another level. Again, that's The Actor's Awakening, Connecting Spirituality to Craft, available on Kindle and paperback on Amazon. And as always, if you like the show, please subscribe.
Well, I think there's something you kind of opened up here, which I'd like to go into a little bit, meaning. I think there's something interesting about that here, because, yeah, like when you're not really grateful, and then you go, oh, okay, I'm going to be grateful. I should be grateful for these things, but you're not really grateful. It's not really going to work. And you go, oh, gratitude exercise stuff doesn't work. And it's like, yeah, because you're not actually connected with it. Like, for a moment there, like when I was talking about my cat and the fact that he might not be here one day, and then there was emotion. I don't know if anyone could tell in my voice, but like my voice was kind of twisting a little bit because I was actually getting emotional, and then it kind of, you know, and then that moment passed and I moved on. But that was a moment of me truly connecting with what that would mean. And through meaning, then it comes, okay, well, I'm really grateful, you know, in spite of this annoying thing I find annoying or uncomfortable at the moment, you know what, actually, I'd rather be here than not be here. And so, you know, there's that. And I think meaning is a matter of, you know, getting down to the truth and actually getting kind of closer to the core of what's going on. And I think part of the issue is that, you know, as we are talking about truth, not the truth, but your truth, which I think people don't always know because they have fancy ways of kind of deceiving themselves and convincing themselves they don't care about stuff they actually care about, and that stuff doesn't matter when it actually does, and all of these things. And, you know, I was thinking about it. It's like, yeah, it's, that's why you should never lie. Like, you know, I get why people lie. There's many reasons why we lie. And sometimes there are practical reasons, and there are reasons that are upholding our values because we're trying to protect something or take care of something. And there's a mindfulness to it, but there's also an escapism to deception where it's like, I don't want to face the music, so I'm just going to kind of do this fancy little way of twisting the story around so I can kind of bullshit and kind of get what I want without having to really face it. And every time you do that, you disconnect yourself from the truth again and again and again. And there's a consequence. What the thing about lying when it's not done mindfully, I mean, maybe it's okay when it's done mindfully, because I think that there's a value and a reality that's being upheld in it. Like, for example, a kid asks you about something and, you know, you might not tell them what something is because it's like, well, they're too young to hear that. You know, some people, they have this disagreement. They might not agree with that, but like, whatever, there are examples where sometimes it's better to not disclose everything. And sometimes it's better to actually not, you know, there's just times where it might be better to lie, but if you're doing it out of a kind of value that you're upholding and you're not trying to bullshit and you're not trying to manipulate or get anything out of it, you're simply doing it because there's a higher value to uphold. To me, that doesn't, I think you're a little more insulated or like protected from creating this false world for yourself. But when you lie out of a manipulative, deceptive kind of cheating bullshit way where you can escape something, escape consequences, not face the music, that type of stuff, this disconnects you from reality and disconnects you from the truth. And particularly it disconnects you from your truth. And I think this is where we end up causing a lot of harm in our lives. Like, we cause a lot of pain in our lives because as we're trying to get our agenda met, when we're not doing it, like when we're not doing it in a real way, in an authentic way, in an honest, ethical, moral way, and we get what we want, there's something that is, it's diluted, and there's also something that separates us from it. It's like winning an award, like winning an award that you didn't earn. On the surface, it seems like a great idea. Hey, I get the award. I get to stand up on stage. I get the acceptance speech, whatever, you know, like, let's go all the way, right? I get all the benefits of the reward, or the money, or the thing, or the whatever, or the relationship, or whatever the reward is. But if you didn't really earn it, there's a new consequence that comes out of that, when people praise you and they say, hey, great, awesome, you can't accept that because you know that you cheated to get it. You know that you didn't really get it for real. And then that creates a disconnect from this thing. And, you know, and so then there's this kind of like, there's this detachment from your life where you're almost like not in your life anymore. I think part of this exercise, you know, or exploration we're talking about is like, there's beauty in the now. There's beauty right here. You need to actually be there, not somewhere else. And we have all these fancy ways of like creating a disconnect and a buffer from us in reality. And how can you tell the truth when you don't know what the truth is? Because you've deceived yourself so much about it. I'll give one example just to kind of like further the point, because I think that's the best way to get through this stuff. I was thinking about somebody I wanted to reach out to, or some people I wanted to reach out to. And, you know, they have clients and stuff that are in a similar industry as me. And I was, you know, I was telling them about, I want to tell them about a project that I'm doing and, you know, and how, you know, I'm inviting people. And I was like, man, I'm scared to talk to them because I don't want them to feel like I'm kind of like stealing their clients and like taking from them and whatever. And so I went off for a hike. And as I was on the hike, I was like, why don't you just tell them that? Why don't you just tell them, hey, look, I wasn't going to reach out to you because I was having this feeling and I don't want this conversation to go that way. The truth is that I wanted to share this with you and I want you to help me get the word out, but I also don't want you to feel like in any way that I'm trying to like take any of your territory or like, that's not what this is about. It's, you know, in fact, if anything, at the end of this conversation, I'd like to know how I could help you more. I want you to feel like things are better. And I said, well, why don't you just tell him that? But that I had to go off into the woods and like have a little bit of an honest approach with myself, because I had fear. And sometimes I think you have a feeling of fear or insecurity or whatever it might be, but you don't know why. You don't know what's happening. And so by being out alone in the woods for a moment with nature and just kind of my own thoughts, I just kind of had a confrontation with myself, and I'm like, oh yeah, like I, this is why I feel that way. And then it's like, well, that's the truth. So tell people the truth. And it's very disarming. And it's like, okay. And now I feel at ease, and then they feel at ease, and we move forward and we can negotiate that. And nobody feels manipulated, deceived, or whatever. The point is that we all have these kind of disconnects from our reality. And I think with difficult emotions or uncomfortable emotions, I think the reason why we usually don't want to feel the emotion is because we're somehow disconnected from the truth of that emotion. That would be my argument. That would be my point that I'd suggest. I'd say if you were in touch with the truth of that emotion, I don't think you would be scared of it anymore. I don't think you would avoid it. I think you'd be like, great, I'm in touch with this. I see what it's telling me. I see the insecurity it's bringing up. I see the news it's showing me. Wonderful. Let me look into that. Let me work with that. Let me get my hands in that clay and kind of play around. But we have this disconnect from our reality. So we go, no, I'm going to go watch TV. I'm going to play some video games, have a drink, do whatever. You know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, because you're not in reality. It's just a bad emotion and you don't understand. But that emotion is legitimate. No matter what emotion comes up, and this is something we learn in acting, and I'm sure Evan will agree with me on this one, but whatever emotion comes up in the moment is relevant. If it comes up, there's something in it. So the moment you deny it, it gets weird. So like, that's one thing about Meisner is like, own the moment, you know, be in the moment, be true in the moment, and then we can work with that. But if you try to pretend it's not there and do something else and try and control and manipulate it, it gets fucking weird.
Yeah, I mean, not even just Meisner, but just great acting. You know, it's just like, well, that's the thing that's happening in the moment. And, you know, maybe afterwards the director says like, hey, that wasn't quite appropriate, you know, or for whatever reason doesn't quite work or isn't quite the vision. Hey, that happens, but you're, you know, I always say truth is better than a great big lie.
Yeah.
You know, it's you go with the thing that's real, and because the thing is that at least as an audience member, there's not something weird about it for me, you know, like, because yeah. Whatever the director's issue about the thing is going to be is because it has, it's about something else at that point. You know, there's a certain, like, again, there's a direction that they have that they're trying to see through. And maybe that thing doesn't, what happened there doesn't fit it. But in the moment it was true. Right. And at least to the audience, they go, it's like, oh, wow. Like, this is what happened in that moment, and it wasn't some bullshit, because we can see that when that happens. But anyhow, that's a whole other thing. There's something in what you were saying that made me think about how this thing about lying and truth, and, you know, I would say it like, there's a great philosophical argument to be made that like lying is never justified. And that it's never the right move to do, because even if there's something, you know, you even said the word like choose not to disclose, right? Which is in many ways, yeah, like, you know, for a kid or something, like there might be some sort of a thing that you just don't want to lay on them. And you can just be honest about that thing. It's like, hey, listen, we will have this conversation one day and we will talk about this, but this isn't the time. I don't think this is the time, right, to go into this thing. And it's not something I think that you need to be worried about, right? Maybe there's a conversation that continues on after that. But, you know, you don't necessarily need to lie at any point, right? I think that just being transparent at times is really solves a lot of those problems, right? But this thing of, I just jotted this down here and somewhere what you said, it just made me go, it's like, well, yeah. And part of the thing is that the past and the future is a lie, right? Like if we're living in those places, we are living in a type of lie, right? Whereas in the present moment, if we're in contact with that present moment, we're in contact with something that is true. And through that, by extension, there's the possibility that we're in contact with something that is beautiful, right? But it's hard to maintain beauty through a lie, right? Something that removes us from reality. The other thing that came to mind, and I hope I can contextualize this appropriately for this thing. I feel like I've been really struggling for words today, but that thinking is a dead thing. And what made me think about that, was what you were saying about this. You went on for this hike, you know, and you had this problem. And part of the thing is like, there was this challenge that you face, and you hear about, you know, not just artists, but a lot of scientists and creatives and stuff. You know, there's stories about like Einstein going out for a walk and suddenly having, you know, these insights into these problems, because sometimes you can't just sit down and force your way and think your way into the solution. And as we bring up very often on this show, Mr. Alan Watts, the great philosopher, you know, he talks about, it's like, well, if you don't take some time to take a break from thinking and be quiet and listen, how will you have new things to think about? Mm-hmm. Because if you're just thinking about thinking, you're just looping stuff you already know on repeat, mm-hmm, over and over and over again. So, you know, you get out for a walk or whatever it is, you know, there's all sorts of different things that we have that, you know, various different things work for us better than others, but we have these things that help us get into contact with that reality that is outside of just the space of thinking, right? Even if just for a moment. And isn't it fascinating how suddenly a new thought has space to enter, wherever that even comes from, right? But you go, oh, right, I could just do this, or I could approach this problem in this way. And I couldn't see that before, but I needed to get outside of where I was thinking, right? I needed to draw something from a different kind of space, whatever the hell that thing even is, right? But draw that thing. And now suddenly I have a new thought that you can't actually get to just simply by hard determined thinking. Right? That's why it's so important to find these kinds of spaces, you know? But again, it's a part of our culture to just think that we can will these things. It's like, well, sometimes you got to totally step away from the thing. Just walk away from this thing for a bit, clear your mind, and then the solution somehow magically appears itself to you. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think that process is, it's still a very real process. So that sort of is what I mean by thinking is dead, right? Thinking is thinking without having any breaks from thinking is a dead thing. It's stagnant, right? It's a skeleton of sorts, you know, like thinking is, because it's always based on the past, things that we've already experienced, right? That's why I think skeleton is a good thing, is because it's like, well, it's just what's left over from a real alive thing that happened, right? There was this real alive thing that happened, but now it's a skeleton, right? It's a skeleton in your mind. Not that you can't draw something from those skeletons, but we have to remember to create room for the alive moments to continue. We have to continue letting those things move through and be engaged with those types of things. But we seem to feel like we have to continue pulling up the skeletons in order for things to just stay together for whatever reason.
I love that analogy. I love it. I think it's great. You know, yeah, you're left with this skeleton of it. And I think that there's inertia is such a big part of what gets us stuck and unable to break free. So, you know, something I find myself, it happens every now and then where I was just like, oh man, you know, I'm like, I don't want to do this, or I'm struggling with this or whatever. And it's like, oh, I should go for a hike or go for a motorcycle ride or something. It's like, I don't have time for that. It's like, that's all you have time for. That's something I've started to do. Is I just like last night I went out, man. I was like, I needed to get some work done. And I was like, well, come on, we got deadlines. We got to get this stuff done. We got to get it, you know, whatever. And I'm like, well, right now, the way that I'm feeling and thinking is just like, it's not working for me. And I can keep sitting in this and I can keep doing this. That's the inertia. And that was actually easier to do. And then I was just like, hey, you know what? Interruption. Let's go for a motorcycle ride. And you know what? Like, let's just drive out. And I drove all the way out to, like, I drove like 30 minutes out to, I'm just going to go to a beach I've never been to. I'm going to go to a spot I've never been to. And I stood there and I watched the sunset. I took a couple pictures. And then I was just like, man, this is just incredible. And like all the worries and all the concerns and everything I had before I left, it just dissipated, gone. And I'm in a new world. And I'm like in this total moment of beauty. You know what, man? I drove back. I came back. I did all the work that I needed to do. And it was just like, well, I could have just suffered for the last hour or hour and a half or however long I was gone. Or I could have taken an hour and a half, quote unquote, break. But like, it was a healthy break, a break from an inertia. And then I can approach this. And yeah, like I was in a skeleton. Like it was a skeleton of a thought. It was just looping on this thought of, you know, like how I was feeling and what I was thinking and stresses and worries. And then when I looked at the sunset, it was one of those moments of presence because it was so beautiful. Like where I was on the coast, it's like the, just to describe it for people so they understand yourself here, like the sun's going down on one side. So it's this beautiful red orange glow. And then across the ocean and the mountains on the other side, it just gets more and more into this blue till it gets dark as you look all the way across over to the other side of the coast. And it's just kind of dark on that side, bright on this side, and this incredible glow that's just kind of coming across. And you're looking at that and you're like, what was I worried about again? Well, what was I all stressed out about? Oh yeah. Okay. And then boom, it's like that skeleton is just fucking thrown out. And then we're onto a new thing and are alive again. And I think inertia is a really big part of what we're talking about here. Yeah. And you know what? Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's the interruption, you know, maybe there's beauty in the now is about going like, hey, it's not so great in this moment, but where is the beauty? Because there's beauty somewhere and it might not be here where you are, what you're looking at, what you're thinking about. So why don't you look for that? And then that will form your next decision. And I'll tell you, last night as an exercise, not that I was even thinking about this that we're talking about today, but it was a great example of this. You know, it was just like interrupt the pattern, go do something that gets you out, that breaks it, you know, that gets you moving, that gets you doing something fun, something enjoyable, something that makes you want to be alive. And it filled me with energy and I came back and I had energy and I, you know, I did what I needed to do. So Evan, as another interrupt, let's do beer. Let's wrap this baby up. You had your first sip and you seemed to really like it. So I'm wondering after this whole conversation, what do you think?
Well, my feelings and thoughts have not changed since the first sip. This is really great. And I'm not surprised that this is from Yellow Dog Brewing. Should I, do you want me to know? Okay. So this is you brought this one in today. This is called Tug of War NZ or NZ IPA, standing for New Zealand, I presume.
Yep.
The New Zealand IPA. New Zealand IPA. whatever that means exactly. I've never even heard of a New Zealand IPA. Never come across it. But this is, if this is the kind of IPA that New Zealand produces, I'm a fan. It's like, it's really tasty. Just like a beautifully balanced IPA. It's not overwhelming. It's like the hops doesn't just like punch you in the face. You know, it's really there, but it's nicely mellowed out and balanced out by, you know, all these other kinds of flavors, and it's got a kind of richness to it. I'm a big fan. Again, not surprised. Yellow Dog, I mean, they're on top of their game in terms of brews. So yeah, I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, I never had this one before and tried it out. Tug of War, it's called. And yeah, the back says it's a battle royale of flavors and aromas, which I would say is very accurate. You know, it's very flavorful and tasty. Okay, well, we'll wrap this baby up. You know what? I'm going to pass it to you. What are your final thoughts?
All right. Well, coming back to the title, there's beauty right now. Interestingly enough, it seems like, yeah, a lot of this conversation seems to have been about, like, how do we interrupt the inertia of what seems to be an autopilot, like our default mode, which is not great. You know, sometimes there's like, but it's very often like, just like, you know, grim reality, let's be serious, let's be, you know, and very much eschews away from recognizing positive things. And not just positive thinking as like deluding ourselves, but positive things that have real concrete reality to them, right? How easy it is to actually get into contact with that thing. But it's, you know, we're at the end of this conversation, but it's something that I will be thinking about, you know, on my drive home. But it's interesting that in many ways, this the recognition of beauty is something that we have to almost interrupt ourselves to do. Right? It's like we have to in many ways kind of work for it to a certain degree. It's like it's something that's outside of what we ordinarily experience. You know, it's like, well, there's the work, there's the real stuff that has to get done, and then in whatever time you have left, you can go and do what you want to do. You want to go for a walk. You want to go on a vacation. You want to go to the beach. You want to do some art. Okay, cool. But it's not the real thing. But it's like, well, what's life without beauty in it? You know, like if there's no beauty in it, then like what? Honestly, we should all just, you know, just blow all the nukes and let's just call it a day, folks. But I don't think that way and I don't feel that way. And because there's beauty all around us, and it's available for us to recognize at all times, right? But it requires us to, it seems kind of bizarre in the way that at least in the way that I've been conditioned to think in my life, that means becoming more in contact with reality, my present reality, right? I think that's part of the problem. It's just like, you know, we think of present reality as like, well, there's this problem over here and there's this problem. There's all these problems. But hang on, your present reality right now, where are you? Literally, where are you? Right? Is that your problem at this moment? Probably not, right? What are the things that you truly feel blessed by in your life? And let's recognize these things and we go, oh, holy shit, there's so many beautiful things happening right now in this moment that I can also recognize as being true and real. It's not a fantasy. These are real things. And maybe through that process of taking more time to have that recognition, we fill our lives with more and more beautiful moments, right? And are able to find it. You know, it's like, but maybe we need to train ourselves a little bit to do that, you know, because I feel like we're not necessarily trained to do that. You know, we're not, we haven't wired ourselves to do that. And it's, there's probably a little bit of effort that, that we need to exert in order to make that happen. But I mean, hey, the end result is that we just find ourselves living in more and more beautiful moments. And I mean, hey, I don't know what else to say past that. Who doesn't want to live in more and more beauty in their lives? So, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, where do you even go from this? I think talking about that inertia thing or coming across that there at the end, that's helpful in recognizing that, you know, there's that story I remember hearing. It's like two prisoners in a cell look out the window. One looks out and sees the dirt. The other one looks out and sees the sunset or the sky or whatever. The stars. Okay. Evan corrected me. But he's right. Okay. But the thing is like, yeah, like, what are you looking at? And I think perspective is a important thing. It's like, where are you putting your attention? And, you know, one of the takeaways for me from this conversation was, well, I mean, it's weird to say the things that you said earlier again, but what I did discover, and I'd like to reiterate, is that, yeah, when I was kind of stressed and worried and anxious, I noticed that I was usually focused on like one small thing and not seeing the 10 or 20 or 100 other things that were wonderful and great. And so if you are feeling stressed, anxious, or some type of challenging emotion, it can be helpful to go like, wait a minute, let's just stop for a second. Let's put this into context. Like, is this the whole world? Because I feel like when you get caught in anxiety or worry or fear or dread, stuff like that, where you don't, most people, I don't think they really want to feel that. It's very easy to make that your entire world, and that's everything. You get hyper-focused, minutely focused on that thing. And if you were to step back a second and look around, you begin to say, well, this is one small thing in a plethora of good things. And, you know, there's lots of things that we take for granted that, you know, if you're not in a practice of gratitude, you don't even see. Like, for example, having air in your lungs and just being able to breathe clearly. Like, do you know what it's like when your throat is all sore or clogged up, or your nose is clogged up and you can't breathe and you're coughing all the time? Like, have you had that experience? Like, you're not doing that right now. How great is it? And then we just go like, well, I'm entitled to that. Like, we have this kind of attitude of like, well, I'm entitled to be healthy. It's like, look, if your health gets taken away, you'll want nothing more than health. It's like, you begin to see that health is probably the most important value in the entire eternity of life. It's just like to be healthy, right? Because when you don't have it, there's nothing that you would want more, and people will spend their life savings to try and get it back because not having it. And then, you know, there's like, look at everything. Like, can you move your fingers? Can you just like, even can you just move your fingers on your hand? Let alone can you do anything with them? But the fact that you have that, you know, is this stuff. If you didn't have it, it would be brutal. So, you know, part of the gratitude thing too, is there's beauty in this moment, is like, look at all the stuff that you just feel entitled to and you just feel like you should just have, and go like, well, what if all that was taken away? You know, and what if this was taken away? What if that was taken away? And that can help you get connected to gratitude. And then, you know, you're trying to make progress, you're trying to build, you're trying to add to your life. Of course, that's great. And if you don't have it, one thing that I've learned, because like, for example, I'll give you an example. I have a motorcycle. It's a great fucking motorcycle. I got an awesome motorcycle and it gets a lot of compliments and I love riding it and it's awesome. And I want to get another motorcycle, but I want to get a bit of a bigger engine, a little more power, whatever. And I do. I really want it. The thing is I have a motorcycle and I should be grateful for the motorcycle I have. And I am grateful for the motorcycle I have. And yet I want another bigger motorcycle. So here's the thing. You can want and feel lacking and without and still be grateful. And something that I've learned is like, I'm grateful that there's something I want. Because I've also gone through an experience in my life where I didn't want anything and I was like depressed and everything was pointless. So if there's something you really want, like you really just want it and you don't know how to get it and it feels so far to reach, but you want it, just be thankful for the desire to even want something. Because like if you begin to find out when you have like desirelessness, when you're like totally no desire or purposelessness, it can be brutal. So then you go, well, I have something to want. That gives me something. And that's good. There's beauty in that. You know, like, or example, like I'm hungry right now. I'm just hungry. I want a meal. The fact that you feel hunger, you can actually like, you can turn that into like, you can transmute all of these feelings and these things into like beauty, things that drive you, things that make you, there is a weird thing about satiation when you, and satiation is like being complete, being full, being, having everything, every pleasure you need, it's all there and you got everything you want. And it feels good at first and that's kind of, but like if it never goes away, it's a fucking nightmare. And so we spend so much of our life trying to get satiated and trying to get completed, trying to get full. And there's a certain amount of like, not being full, which is actually what makes life so exciting. And it's actually what drives you to do a lot of what you do. You know, so there's kind of this relationship. I think what I'm walking away from this is like, there's this relationship of like, okay, it's beautiful if I'm lacking something and it's beautiful if I have everything I need. And it's all about kind of how I look at it. And like, you know, there will be moments where I feel complete and I have everything I need, but there's always something else I could need or want. And then there's a hunger and a sometimes a feel of lack that can come up when I feel like, oh man, I really want this and I don't know how to get it and feel so far to reach. But that can be exciting because I can look at that and go like, how is this making me step into something that I wouldn't otherwise step into? Because if you're satiated, you're not growing. That's a thing to keep in mind. Like you're going to stay still. You're going to stop because there's nothing you need to go for anymore. So when you're hungry or you're thirsty or you're desiring, you can look at that and be like, I have something in my body and something in my form that's telling me to be expansive, to go out and get on the hunt, to go and explore. And so, you know, I think there's a certain amount of like, we shouldn't be trying to numb these feelings. We should be trying to learn to play them like a musical instrument and be like, oh, great. I'm glad I get to play that chord right now. I'm glad that's the beat in the song that I'm in. And not try to be in some other moment in the song, but be in this moment. Because this moment is going to pass and it's going to be gone. And there'll be days like, I know I'm on a little bit of a talk here, but one other thing, there was a place I moved into in Kitsilano, Vancouver, right on the beach pretty much. And it was the first place that I moved out on my own. And I lived there for about 8 or 9 years, 10 years almost. And it was fucking awesome. And I loved it. And I had so many great times and I'll never have it again. Never that. I might have a house again in Kits on the beach that could possibly happen, but it'll never be that place and it'll never be that time in my life again. And I'll never be able to recreate what was then. And I look back and if I was to talk to my younger self, I'd say, man, just appreciate, like if you, as much as you fucking can, try to appreciate this because you don't know how good you got it right now. This is so great. Not to say that this moment isn't great too. But there are moments in our life and we just miss them because we're like so on to the next moment. And there's beauty in the now.
Thank you for listening in on our conversation today. We hope you found something helpful that you can carry forward with you. Head over to our website, wayoftheartist.com, for more free exclusive material and learn about the show. If you haven't already, please support us by subscribing to the show, sharing it with people you know, and keeping compassionate, creative conversation going.